This meeting is being recorded.
Welcome to the last World Cup countdown episode of Backpass with Russ. And as usual, I am joined by my co-host, the, I wanted to say angry young man suddenly. I don't know why, but no.
Angry young man.
It's not him at all. It's the resident young man. Kelvin, how are you doing?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Okay, fine. No jersey today for you?
No jersey. I ran out of jerseys, man. I don't know what to wear. I was contemplating to wear my Brazil one, but I was like, you know what? It's okay. Let's just.
I was expecting you to wear a jersey. That's why I wore a jersey. And it's the final episode.
By the way, countdown. So by the way, you are wearing a like a Malaysian jersey, I see there.
Yeah, it's a Malaysian t-shirt, but you know, I couldn't get the Italy one I had was in washing or ironing or something, wasn't ready.
Right.
And there were a few that I have kept aside and not for wearing. So yeah. So a bit limited in terms of choices. Okay.
Right.
2018, the last World Cup before this one is about to start. In fact, we're going to air it on the day that the World Cup starts, on Sunday. And 2018 is the first World Cup in which I was a married man. So my first World Cup as a married man.
Very memorable World Cup, I would say.
Yeah, very memorable. Things have turned, as you can see, from my life journey. I became married. I met someone. I got married. So, yeah.
Had a kid?
Not yet. Not at this World Cup. Okay, that was at Euro 2020, but not at this World Cup.
When we do this year's World Cup, then we will speak about the kid.
Yep, correct. Yourself, Kel, you were...
Where was I? I was 2018. I was in Canada.
Oh, you're already in Canada?
Yeah, I was in Canada. 2018, I was in Canada.
Okay.
So, 2018 was the first year I was in Canada, still learning my
French.
Was the World Cup? I can't remember now. The World Cup was actually in the afternoon or something like that for me.
Maybe in Canada, but in Singapore.
Was in the afternoon. I remember I was working, but like, you know, secretly like streaming it at the site. This was quite amazing. Because Canada didn't have like a really strong support for football. Not like now. Mm. Like now they are there because they have qualified and, you know, they had a lot of support. But when I was there, it was not much, people watching the football game. They are more basketball or hockey. But yeah, so I was in Canada. So it was a really good time.
All right. Okay. So let's bring on our guests and I'll bring them on and then I'll introduce them.
Right.
There's some similarity between the two guests today. And here we are, the guests for today. All right, so we got returning on the show someone who has previously been on multiple networks, Fox Sports, Star Sports, ESPN, Spanish football expert, been on our show twice already to speak about Spanish clubs. It's Mr. Antonio Kodinek. Hola, Antonio.
Good evening, everybody. Hello, guys. Good to be back. Thanks for having me. A pleasure always.
All right. And next to him, we got someone I would say is the rising star of TV in Malaysia, Astro Arena. He's got his own show called Goal Per 90. And he's also just recently, I think a couple of days ago or yesterday, it was announced that he's going to be one of the panelists, hosts of Astro Arena's World Cup coverage.
Wow.
It's Mr. Lee Chun Hang. How are you doing, Chun Hang?
Thanks so much for the kind introduction there, Russ. But yeah, I'm doing great. It's currently 9 random at the moment. And yeah, I'm buzzing to get this podcast started. Thanks for inviting me right away.
Welcome and thanks for accepting the invitation. Chun Hang, perhaps you could share with the rest of us who do not know much about your show, Goal Per 90. What's it all about?
All right, sure. So I host a show with Kish Mudstats. I'm sure that you guys will know him, Kish Mudstats. So we have a show called Goal Per 90. It's basically a football analytical show in Malaysia where we talk about, you know, the rising news. We talked about Newcastle United, we talk about Karim Benzema, but we use stats to back up whatever we say. So we'll have graphics, you see passing networks, passing charts, passing maps, and we just try to visualize it and to give it a storytelling component to whatever we have in football. It's a really good show, and yeah, check it out. It's on, for Malaysian viewers, it's on Astro Arena 2, channel 802, every Friday, 8:15 p.m. Thanks so much for letting me promo that.
Yeah, no problem. No problem at all. So that's for Malaysian viewers and also those in Singapore who have the illegal Android boxes.
View it on that. Yeah. Are you sure you can say these kind of things here, bro? Like, yeah,
those we are not governed by anybody. You can say anything. Antonio was supposed to be on our show speaking about World Cup 2010, a World Cup that, of course, arguably very special for him as a proud Spaniard. Antonio, you want to share some memories of that World Cup?
Sure, I was in Singapore and I enjoyed it with friends. I think it did not come as a surprise, as we were already European champions, and I think in the atmosphere of football, in particular in the Spanish community, majority of us thought that we only needed to do well in one tournament, meaning, of course, to maybe win silverware like it happened in 2008, to really remove that heavy shoulders and play our best for pretty much, I would say, one full generation, right? That cycle that went 2008, yeah. 10, and then 2012. And we will have time later on, I believe, to talk about how difficult it is to rebuild a team or to build a team that has won everything, especially every 4 years in a World Cup, because the first thing not that the memories of 2010 are the memories of 2014, but of course is inevitable not to talk about 2014 when you talk about 2010. So definitely a tournament that it will remain in the memory of all the Spaniards. I don't know if I will ever see, you never know, maybe in Qatar in a few days, something as magnificent as what it happened in South Africa. Can you believe it? 12 years ago.
Yeah, it's already been 12 years. Okay, we got to start with another one bites the dust, because Germany got knocked out of 2018 in the group stage, following a trend of European world champions that got knocked out in the group stage. So, Germany, out in the group stage, surprised, Antonio or Chunang? Either one of you can go first.
Chunang, you can go. I just mentioned something, but I will for sure compliment what you say.
All right, man. Thanks. So, Germany, it was definitely a surprise to me. Like, they were coming in as world defending champions with a great squad. Albeit, Miroslav Klose was retired at that point. They didn't have a potent striker. They had Timo Werner, who at that point just transferred to Chelsea, but he hasn't hit the ground running. And it showed in this tournament, which nobody expected them to only just win once. They won once against Sweden, a 2-1 win, and they lost twice. One against Mexico, 1-0, and another 2-0 against South Korea. Now, nobody expected that. Exactly. I love that game, man. I love that game so much. Yeah. The goalkeeper was amazing. He saved like so many headers. I mean, so many attempts from them. But it just goes to show, like, Germany couldn't score in the entire tournament. Okay, so in three games that they played, what I have here is that they scored two goals, one from open play, the Marco Reus one against Sweden, and the other one, the magnificent last-minute goal from Toni Kroos.
That was
brilliant. But there's only one open play goal in three games. It just goes to show that they haven't been scoring yet. They are very dominant in possession. They created so many chances, but either by luck or just poor finishing, they just couldn't convert. To give you a stat, right? Mats Hummels, their center back, has accumulated the highest expected goals. This is a new statistic, a new metric to say, like, to put it frankly, how many goals are you expected to score? And Mats Hummels ranked the highest. And it just goes to show a center back with accumulating the highest amounts of expected goals, it doesn't paint a good picture on Germany. So what do you think?
Yeah, so, okay, just one correction there. Timo Werner was still playing for RB Leipzig at this time.
Thanks for correcting me. So he was in good form.
Just to add one more thing, Germany, other than Timo Werner, just brought another striker called Mario Gomez. And the rest was just midfielders. And, you know, I wouldn't think you put Thomas Müller in that striker bracket. Maybe he's a striker, maybe he's not. He's like, you know, a mixed player, right? Like, but other than Timo Werner, who is not really a striker as well, but out and out striker, Mario Gomez. Then there you go. Yeah.
And he was 32
at that time. And not exactly at his peak. And in any way, even when he was younger, I don't think he was really fantastic striker. It's okay.
They made themselves closer.
No, the thing I wanna bring back is two things. You know, we mentioned the South Korea Germany game. If I'm not wrong, it was a very good game. Do you guys remember when did South Korea score the two goals?
The last
very
minute.
Late in the game. Yeah,
the last minute.
94. So 90 plus 4 and 90 plus 6.
Yes.
So one thing to remember that, you know, for all of us and everybody watching and listening is just, you know, football is football because it's so unpredictable and things can change, you know, the very last minute. But going back to what you say in terms of, you know, Mario Gomez and Timo Werner and that Germany team in Russia, it is so, so difficult to regenerate a team of stars that have been playing so well and performing so well and winning silverware, as we mentioned. And it's difficult to make that transition because managers, they are not able to make that transition because those players are the players that gave that manager the glory 4 years before in Brazil as world champion. How on earth that manager 4 years later is going to say, oh, you know what, I'm going to revolutionize the team? And this is exactly, and you know, because I can't connect the dots, what Vicente del Bosque went through from South Africa to Brazil, right? He kept pretty much the same squad in Brazil that was in 2010 world champion, and he received a lot of criticism because it was very obvious that team needed a revamp. So look, it's small details, it's managers, there are so many aspects. And I'm very glad to have Chunghan here because, you know, I know he's going to bring a lot of data and statistics. And I think that's going to be a very rich chat overall. So, yeah.
Antonio, I have a question. Would you say it's down to motivation then? Because these guys, if you look at their squad, Germany squad, I mean, they have all the players there. The bulk of the players actually moved on. They're the same players. It's just that maybe it's what, motivation? It's after you win the World Cup, or what do you reckon?
If I give you tomorrow 10 billion Singapore dollars and you buy in 3 years or 4 years, pretty much, you know, everything, and you go on a holiday and you buy your house, you buy your parents a house, and you do pretty much, you achieve everything that you wanted to achieve as per now. What is your ambition? What are your goals? It's so, so difficult. Definitely is a mentality issue. But as I say, it's a mix of how can I motivate again this group of people that has won everything. That Spain squad had players who had won 6 trophies with Pep Guardiola and Barcelona, if I'm not wrong. And it's so, so, so difficult, which, by the way, is the main reason why we've been talking in this show for a while, the reason why he left Barcelona at that time, right? Because he was not in a position where he could have rebumped the time. So, look, yes, motivation, but then also it's like, so what? The players go to Russia and they were world champions. They have won everything they wanted to or they dream of. So definitely it's a lack of motivation, and also because the gap in between teams it's smaller and smaller and smaller. Germany was in a group with Sweden, Mexico and South Korea. They were last with Mexico, Sweden and South Korea, right?
It's quite similar to Italy in 2010, where they were last in a group with Paraguay, yeah. New Zealand, and Slovakia. Yeah, so very similar. And I remember watching that South Korea game. I was in a bar for a briefing, conducting a briefing. At the end of it, I was just hanging around, having dinner, watching the game. South Korea, not really my favorite team after 2002, but yeah. But for that one, I was supporting. For that one, I was supporting them, and they. Oh man, that was epic. The last 2 minutes of the game was crazy.
Madness. I think Heung Min Son couldn't believe his luck when he ran onto the second ball.
And that was a brilliant goal.
Practically an empty net. And you know, I think he just couldn't believe his luck. And it's such an amazing what football can bring to you.
I just want to add something on regarding motivation, right? On defending champions. So I read this stat the other day, it's quite interesting. Three of the five defending champions, the past five defending champions, failed to qualify into the knockouts. Just think about that for a second. Three of the last five. So it just goes to show, maybe France this season, we never know what they are going to do. I mean,
they're
suffering injuries. Yeah, I mean, suffering injuries a lot. Pogba's out, Kante's out. It might become four.
And Cuckoo's out. And Cuckoo this morning, I think.
Exactly. So the motivation part, man, 100%. It's a good, it's a really good point you raised there.
Okay, the next one, Antonio, this one I'm going to speak to you on the performance of the host nation, because in a way, it's connected to your nation as well. So what do you make about Russia's performance in this World Cup?
I mean... I think at least they did what they expected, which is, I think when you host a tournament of this magnitude, of course, you know, one thing is what you believe you can achieve. The other one is the expectations. But you know, for them reaching quarterfinals and you know losing against Croatia in the extra time, imagine if Russia would have played the semifinals with England, you never know what it could have happened. I was not surprised, to be honest, that they beat us in the round of 16, because we were not playing well at all. But I think for them as a host country, at their level that they were, which is not the best, to reach quarterfinals and really push Croatia, which they were definitely one of the best teams in Russia, all the way to extra time. Actually, they went to penalties, if I'm not wrong.
Penalties, right?
Yeah, they went to 4-3 on penalties. Not bad. But I think overall, you know, as expected, we were talking about motivation just now. When you host a tournament like this, you know, it's not only your fans on the benches, but it's also, you know, it's how proud you are and how good you wanna perform in front of your people and if everybody, and what cannot happen with, which I believe only happened to Spain recently, or I can't remember who else. You should not host a World Cup and get eliminated in the group stage.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
South Africa did that. Yeah, they got knocked out in the group stage when they hosted.
True, but I'm talking about maybe, you know, South Africa might not be a great example, as you know, they're let's say FIFA level. But I remember Spain in the 82. I'm very 82, old. I remember the 82. When we host, Chung Hang is looking at me like, he looks very old. But I do remember very well the World Cup in Spain, and we did terrible. So yeah, it shouldn't be. Of course. Nicely, we made that up nicely a few years later.
All right, so that was the performance of the Russians. Russia has never been a team that has, you know, like impressed me in a World Cup. I remember my first ever World Cup in 94. Their only memorable performance was thrashing Cameroon 6-1 and, you know, Oleg Salenko had like 5 goals. And that time that Russian team had some infighting. So you had some really good Russian players not in their squad. But beyond that, in international competitions, I think the only time Russia has impressed was Euro 2008, where it got to quarterfinals. Yeah. Was it semifinals? Something like that. Semifinals. They got the semifinals in that Euro 2008. And so that was the only time Russia impressed me. So they and had then a good now striker, this one.
Zuba or something. Zuba?
Yeah, Artem Zuba, yes.
Yeah, Zuba. Giant of target. He had a good tournament.
He had three goals, yeah. He was a man mountain. He was just bullying defenders in the air and just on the pitch.
Yeah.
But I really want to give this player a lot of credit, which to me one of the players of the tournament, Denis Cheryshev.
Denis Cheryshev, yeah. He played for Villarreal at that time.
Yeah, he played for Villarreal at the time, and I think he was part of the Real Madrid system as well at one point. He went Villarreal. So he was class, but he actually didn't start the game against Saudi Arabia. He came off the bench within the first half and immediately contributed two goals and subsequently became one of the players to watch in the tournament and just became Russia's limelight in that system with Artem Zuba. Brilliant winger for me. Alongside Golovan as well, Alexander Golovan.
Golovan, yeah.
Thanks for bringing up all these names, man.
Funny thing, can I say something about Russia? Just one quick one. Fun fact. They played against Croatia, and the player who scored the equalizer, his name is Fernandez. He scored the equalizer, but unfortunately, he was also the one who missed that penalty that actually got them out. So how I remember him is because I was, you know, I remember like looking at the Russian squad and I remember, what is a Fernandez doing in the Russian squad? It makes me a bit confused, right? But that's just a fun fact about Russian.
Naturalized Russian, correct. Yeah.
Mario Fernandez, right?
Mario Fernandez. I forgot his first name, but I know it's Fernandez.
Mario Fernandez.
Spanish mom. Spanish mom, Russian father, most probably. The other way around better. I was just joking, but you never know. You know, one of those players that, you know, suddenly they come out of nowhere and they excel in a big tournament. It's interesting that we mention Cheryshev because he's been such a average player in the Spanish Liga. And it is true, he was initially in the Real Madrid School of Football, and then moved to Valencia, did a couple of the things, if I'm not wrong, and then end up in Villarreal. But I remember clearly, and I think we will talk about some of the best games of 2018, and I remember the Russia-Spain, where he was really like one of the best players, and I'm thinking about who is this guy that, sure, you know, the name is popular, but nobody knows how he plays in Spain, and now he's, you know, giving us so many headaches.
Okay, so Mario Fernandez, born in Brazil, actually. Naturalized Russian. So now, coming closer to home now, Japan's qualification to the knockout round, the only team that from Asia that qualified to the knockout round. I mean, they did it in 2010. After the World Cup, they hosted, of course, they did it in 2010. But this one, the interesting thing is they qualified based on fair play award. I think best disciplinary record. So I've never seen that before. Best disciplinary record
welcome to the World
led
Cup.
To their qualification to the knockout round. Amazing. So yeah, guys, Chunang, maybe you start with you.
You know what? That's a funny thing you said there. I mean, I remember watching their last game of the tournament the last game in their group stages against Poland. They were losing 1-0 to Poland, but they knew they had this advantage of this fair play thing. As long as they
don't foul anybody.
Some mayhem in the 90th.
No yellow cards.
Yeah.
No yellow cards.
So what they did was really, really boring but smart. Okay. So they let Poland have the ball. Poland knew they were going to get knocked out either ways. So they were just passing it. And it was the most boring 20 minutes of football of my life. All right. Granted, I'm still quite young, but it was so boring. They were just passing it around because they knew Japan's going to go through 1-0. And Japan's not bothered to attack anymore. They've basically qualified based on, I mean, what you've said there, the least amount of yellow cards. So Japan, but other than that, they gave a really good fight against Belgium. So unfortunate to lose.
Oh, yes.
2-0 up.
Yeah, exactly. 2-0 up. And that was like, you know, 2-0 up. It was like probably 60-something minutes, close to 70 minutes, they were 2-0 up. And then, yeah, unfortunate, man.
Nasser Chadli, I think, was the one who scored the winner. Nasser Chadli. Who would have thought, right? Nasser Chadli of all people.
90.
Not your KDB, not your Lukaku. Nasser Chadli.
Wow. Lukaku actually dummied it. So the ball came through, Lukaku dummied that goal, and then Nasser Chadli had that, you know, just a tap in.
So
crazy.
It was a crazy game, but Japan was so unfortunate not to win the game. I mean, like, just to qualify. They've done well, I guess. Against Colombia, they won 2-1 against Colombia, but Colombia had a man down from the second minute onwards. So they had like a red card there. They drew 2-2 to Senegal and they lost 1-0 to Poland and then proceeded to lose 3-2 to Belgium. But overall, I would say Japan in that tournament were quite impressive in the way that they sacrificed for one another. Seiji Kagawa, rolling back the years, was really, really good in that tournament. Alongside Keisuke Honda, I remember there's one game, Keisuke Honda came off the bench and he immediately changed the game. And I think he scored the equalizer against Senegal, I think it was. Oh, he was good as well. But now fast forward like another 4 years, Honda is currently the manager of a team in Asia, I think.
Cambodia,
Cambodia. He's currently the manager, part-time manager or something.
Yeah.
But he was a lovely player.
He's a technical director in Cambodia. The technical director plus coach. They had Shinji Okazaki as well in that team. Makoto Hasebe was the captain. Is he still in the squad this year? I don't know. I know Nagatomo was still in the squad this year. So, yeah, there's the players in the Japanese team.
When are we going to see an Asian team going further than the last 16?
Controversy, I must add.
Speaking about Asian team, I think the 2018 Russia tournament, the Asian team did do pretty decent. If you look at it, Iran drew 1-1 against Portugal. South Korea beating Germany. Who's the last one? Saudi. Saudi won. Definitely won a game or something like that. I can't remember who.
I don't think so. I think they were probably one of the worst.
No, they were. They were in the first group. I was looking at it. They won versus Egypt.
Egypt. Okay.
So they won. Iran. You know, it was quite a good tournament for them. Not like what Antonio said. When are we going to see them break that ceiling? Round of 16 upwards, right?
Well, to the point that none of the Asian teams in Russia were last in their group stage. They were even third or better.
There you go. So decent tournament by the Asian teams.
No, the reason why I asked this is because I was, of course, looking at, you know, some of the data from 2018. And I do feel that 8 groups, 4 teams per group, that's 32 is a large number of teams for a tournament, right? I know we want to be more inclusive and to reach every single corner of the world. I'm thinking also about, how much interest, you know, Poland versus Senegal, for example, will draw. And I don't want to be here the elephant in the room because I do want to make sure that, you know, everybody has really a chance to be in the World Cup. But I say that because I would absolutely love to see an Asian team going further the quarterfinals because they're going to bring something to the game that maybe the rest are not, which is because they never been there, and that surprise factor could be interesting to see and to watch.
But one thing I need to point out to you, Antonio, the South Korea made it to the semi-finals of the World Cup they hosted, but with controversy.
Yeah, Russ will not let them go.
They shouldn't have been there.
No, I'm Russ. I'm not gonna let you talk about that.
He's gonna go on and
that's one World Cup because we can say we feel it.
No. Because what you guys need to organize a show one day with the biggest mistakes of referees in World Cup, and I can guarantee you I will be in the show talking about that specific game.
Okay.
Amazing. When are we going to actually see the African teams, you know, going up? I think.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Yeah, this year's World Cup, I looked at the Senegal's team, not too bad, but Sadio Mane is a bit 50-50. If he's fit, they had a genuine chance. I think this is their golden generation. But when are the African teams who's also making this move? Right? A lot of great African players coming in. So maybe you're in for a surprise, right?
Yeah. But okay, before we go to this year's World Cup, let's go back to 2018.
Oh, sorry.
Now let's talk about the games of the tournament. Antonio, what do you got?
I will mention the one that I mentioned at the beginning of my, I think it was the intro, the second intervention, which is for as much as it was very painful to watch, I think our group stage game versus Portugal was super.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it was fantastic to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a 3-3 with one and only controversial Cristiano doing their best, playing against teammates and, you know, pushing them all the way. And as I say, you know, for as much as it was very, very painful, because I think maybe the World Cup would have been better from that game onwards. I'm always thinking about when I face these kind of questions is, sure, you know, I support Spain, but from the spectator point of view, that was definitely a game to watch. There were a couple of big games in the Belgium and England group, if I'm not mistaken, with big
Belgium,
scores.
England.
Like, I think Belgium beat Tunisia. Was it 5-1 or 5-2? Right,
5-2.
If I'm not wrong. And I think, England crushed Panama like 6-1, right? So,
yeah.
Look, you know, of course, every game with a lot of goals is good, but also when there is like a big, big tight, I do believe that we need to bring back that South Korea-Germany, because those two goals in extra time, that was very interesting. Not only because of the goals, because, you know, a big team was being sent off by an Asian team, which we keep talking about, you know, when we could see a bigger team going, nation team going further.
Okay. I actually have a question, Antonio, about the Portugal and Spain game. Because obviously, prior to that game, Julian Lopetegui was fired just, what, 2 days literally before. So I would love to know your thoughts on it. Do you think he should have stayed? And would Spain do better than they have with Julian Lopetegui? Because he was doing decent, right? Before the World Cup. I mean, the qualifiers, they were doing okay with him.
The way I like to share and explain things, and Kel and Russ know me already for a while, I might need a full show to talk about it, but I'm not going to use a lot of time. But a few factors. Number one, the Spanish Football Federation had a new president recently elected. So every time someone goes into a leadership position, you know, wants to do something like, okay, you know, I'm here, nobody's going to play with our reputation, blah, blah, blah. Number two, it was Real Madrid who signed Julian Lopetegui, right?
Yeah.
Number three, definitely it created some stability. I would personally think that Julian should have stay for the tournament, and after the tournament have a conversation with the president of the federation and decide, look, this, you know, it's what's happening. I'm looking for my future, whatever that is. It was too much unnecessary noise before a big tournament, and something that, you know, I don't know how much aware you guys are, but in Spain, sports, media, radio stations, newspaper, magazines are brutal, are amazing. I mean, we had a topic for like a month, right? Until La Liga started after that World Cup. So to answer your question, no, I think he should have stayed. Things could have been better. Julen built a really good relationship for a few years before that World Cup. And as I say, it was unnecessary noise. And guess what? They only thought of Fernando Hierro as manager to manage the team in the World Cup that, you know, sure, he was part of the Federation team as an advisor, supporter, or I can't remember his role. And then they give him a sweatpants and a hoodie, and now you're going to sit here and you're going to make the lineup and you know, try to perform. So big mistake under my point of view and very, very controversial. But that's very Spain doing way of doing things, very last minute and controversial. Not me, I'm a professional.
Okay. Chunhang, yourself, any matches that you would want to point out, standout matches? Antonio's mentioned Spain, Portugal, certainly. We already spoke about Japan, Belgium. I think that was certainly one of the games of the tournament. South Korea, Germany, also. Any other games?
I really love that, like you've just mentioned that. I mean, Germany and South Korea was my pick of the tournament just because I love an underdog story. But similarly, I think the game of the tournament for me would have to be the final. The final was electric, wasn't it? Croatia, France. I mean, just the way Mbappe. Oh, wait. Argentina versus France was brilliant as well.
Argentina, France. Yeah, 4-3. Yeah. Yes.
That was the game, I think, Kylian Mbappe just lit up the world, right? The blistering pace just destroyed Marcos Rojo. And he was at United at that time, and I was fully expecting him to do something, but to cool him down or something, because he's always known to have that physical sound and physical sight in his gameplay. But Kylian Mbappe was just too fast for him to keep up. And what a performance by him, what a performance by France in general. I remember Pogba was bossing the game as well. So yeah, for me, France, Argentina.
And that Benjamin Pavard goal as well.
It was what a goal by Benjamin. Yeah.
Even Maria's one was brilliant too.
That was quite fun.
Brilliant goals.
I will share one last game if you guys allow me. And as I'm browsing and looking at some of the games, it's good. I remember this clearly, because we knew Croatia could do something really well in Russia. And the first game, they were very solid versus Nigeria. But I do remember now that when I think they called the attention of everybody and were most probably say, look, we are here to do something big, is when they beat 3-0 Argentina at the group stage, right? And I think for me, I remember watching that game now and thinking, ooh, these Croatians are gonna have a long journey in Russia. So I think it's of course relevant that we sometimes at group stage there are games that, you know, there are some details that let you think of, you know, these fellows are serious this year. They have a solid team, they've been playing well, and I think they are hungry for doing something cool. And that's exactly what happened with Croatia, I believe.
All right. That's a good point as well on that game, Croatia against Argentina. So we're going to be speaking about them pretty soon. First of all, let's speak about the semi-finalists, the ones that went to the third and fourth. England, the perennial underachievers, getting to the semi-finals for the first time since 1990. I think Antonio remember the 1990 team. I think that was quite an exciting thing. But this one, I think one thing I got to point out, England finally won a penalty shootout against Colombia on the way to this semi-final. They were really they were lethal in set pieces. So, you know, be it crosses, direct free kicks, corner kicks. I think they were really lethal from set pieces, penalties as well. They've got quite a fair bit. So, yeah, England's journey to the semi-finals, and of course, you know, then it became noisy that he was coming home, and then that's when he stopped. So
you gotta stop doing that, man.
Chunhang.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it was England in that tournament just capitalized on their advantages doing set pieces. Of course, they won three penalties, and Harry Kane just doing Harry Kane things, finishes all three penalties to win the Golden Boot. But at the same time, I think their major weakness was scoring in open play. So their open play, I mean, aside from Panama, right, against Panama, where we've seen a couple of long-range goals as well, they've not really cut open teams. And when they do, they don't seem to make the right decision. And one memory calls back to the moment that against Croatia, where Raheem Sterling should have squared it to Harry Kane, but he didn't. So that was poor decision making in the crucial moments, and that's exactly what defines a brilliant national setup with with someone who finishes fourth, you know, after hyping them out the entire tournament. So they are quite a conservative team to start with. So I wouldn't, even in this tournament, in this this World Cup, I would expect the same thing, really. A lot of set piece goals, and maybe, they've recalled James Maddison, so hopefully he can be the key, which they lacked in the previous World Cup.
Counter-attacking goals as well, I guess.
This time around, they brought a lot of flair players, I think, compared to what they brought 2018. You look at the players, they had Dele Alli, Jesse Lingard was still playing.
All these guys were on form at that time.
They were on form, but you look at the players now that they have, Saka and stuff like that. So I think they got more creativity from the flanks coming into, cutting into it. Foden, rich form for Man City coming in. It's just all about what they do with the... Harry Kane, give him a chance, he will score. But I think 2018, what happened is they took their chances. Kane, and I think John Stones scored two goals or something like that.
Harry Maguire scored.
So as long as they take their chances, I think they have a chance. But, we all know England, when they go up further and further through the tournament, there will be a point where they, they will choke.
Well, how old is Harry Kane?
He is, I think, 30 now or 29?
Yeah, 29. He's 28, 29.
I was going to say he looks 38, but it's okay.
That's my age.
Once again, it's going to be there. I have to say that, I do agree that England is one of those teams that as soon as there is a lot of noise that, there could be a chance here, then they sort of collapse. To be honest, I think the biggest challenge they had in Russia was at the group stage with of course, Belgium. Yeah. Because later on, if you look at the draw, they faced Colombia, and Colombia, they were 1-0, and I'm looking at it, and Colombia scored the equalizer. Equalizer in the 90 plus minutes. So that was pretty much done. And then they face Sweden with all my respect. So pretty much they got quite some sort of like an easy path all the way to quarters, right? Semis. And then true, they push Croatia all the way to extra time, but then. I think they lost with Belgium, right? Their third place, did they?
Yes, they lost to Belgium in the third place. And that's the team we're going to speak about next, Belgium. They came into four, probably World Cup 2014, where this golden generation was coming through. World Cup 2014 is when this golden generation was coming through and everyone was talking, hyping them up. Didn't quite make it. Even in the Euros as well, they were big hype around Belgium, always quarterfinals at best. That's where they reached, I think. And then here we are in the semifinals. They ended the tournament in third place. So, Chunang. This time I'll go with Antonio, sorry. Antonio, good achievement or underachieving?
They play good football. I'm not personally a mega fan. And I don't know if because they don't transfer a lot to the fans, and this is very very, it's my opinion, is not, there are no facts here, is when I do watch them, sure, it's a group of good players, but I've never felt, with a couple of exceptions, I think I watch a couple of games, never been wow in that sense. And I'm not sure if it's a mentality, I don't know if it's they are not super eager. They were quite, their journey in Russia, after the group stage, they knock out Brazil, then they face France, and then of course they lost in the semifinal, which is pretty much, where are we here? No, it's pretty much kind of like 2 years in a row. Well, one semifinals, but in Brazil, I think they went home in the quarterfinals. So overall, they don't transfer anything special when you're watching. Now that I say this, they could be that now they will become world champions in Qatar, and then I will have to shut up for 4 years. Because overall, there is a group of good players. I'm very, very, very keen to see how a player the caliber of Eden Hazard is going to perform, where he has played zero at Real Madrid, and he understands very well his situation at Real Madrid. But I do believe that he's going to play a key role in the World Cup with the national team. So, you know, we'll see. For me, it's always a question mark. They could do great again and reach semifinals or even further, but they, you know, they could get sent home early.
Okay. Junang, you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I actually have a question to ask Antonio here, because obviously Roberto Martinez is the Belgium national team coach. I want to know, what is the perspective? What are the people back in Spain thinking about Roberto Martinez? Is he a quality, a world-class coach? Because at times, if you look at the Belgian system, they look vulnerable at times under him.
Yes, and look, Junhan, it's the first time you and I talk to each other, but for whatever reason, I see some synergies and connection here, because your thoughts, I think, are going something that I wanted to say. I didn't mention Roberto Martinez in my statement about Belgium, because I do believe that that lack of what you show on the pitch comes pretty much from the manager. And being Roberto Martinez, you know, very professional, very calm, very tidy, very formal, I'm not sure if he can implant that killing attitude. The nastiness attitude that you need in a team to achieve something like that. So look, Roberto Martinez pretty much has not trained or managed any teams in Spain, if I'm not wrong. His main career as a manager has been in England, and he is super happy there. I know he's so well considered, but I think from majority of he sounded like a potential Spain manager and FC Barcelona manager whenever I had the opportunity. But it is somebody that I don't think convinced anyone in Spain as someone to really, you know, bring that fire and, as you guys say, nastiness to the team and bring that furia, as we call it in Spain. Mm. He's an excellent manager, I believe. I mean, I've seen his results, but sometimes, yeah, I don't see the match on, for example, what you need as a manager of Spain, right? You compare Luis Enrique with Roberto Martinez, and you have Luis Enrique, who is a hooligan, versus Roberto Martinez, who is a sir.
Yes,
a nice guy.
Yeah.
So now going to Croatia now, the other semi-finalists that made it to the final. They did one better than the generation of 1998. But it's also a very known fact that Croatia produces a lot of talented footballers over the years, since their independence, of course. And even before that, when they were in part of Yugoslavia as well, they always produced talented footballers. So this Croatian side, Junang, what do you got to say about them?
This Croatian side, no matter how many young players they produce, they'll always be governed or just captain and just protected by this Luka Modric mold with Ivan Rakitic, Marcelo Brozovic. This trio, for me, one of the best midfield trios in the World Cup 2018. And they might repeat the same feat again in 2022, considering that, you know, Brozovic last season was brilliant for Inter Milan. Yeah. Luka Modric, we know his quality. Rakitic, okay, he's slowing down a bit, but still, he can produce quality moments. He has that in him. We've seen it in Barcelona. We've seen it in the World Cup 2018 as well, scoring a couple of crucial goals. But I'm really interested to see their new stars in the making. So we have their keeper, Dominik Livković from a team from, I'm not quite sure, Dinamo Zagreb, sorry. So Dominik Livaković, I'm sorry for the pronunciation. But
that's all right, man.
Yeah, but he, for me, is a 26-year-old goalkeeper. I've only ever seen him play once or twice, and he was absolutely brilliant in those games. He's the one replacing Daniel Subasic, who has been Croatia's number one for a really long time. It's a big shoes to fill. But what I want to see more of this tournament is Josko Gvardiol and Borna Sosa. Sorry. So Gvardiol and Sosa, two Bundesliga youngsters who I think can make a name for themselves in this tournament, especially Gvardiol. We've seen what he can do for RB Leipzig. He's a ball carrying center back. So basically, he's very comfortable with the ball. I think he played as a left back for Croatia in the Euros, the Euros tournament, the last Euros tournament. He did okay. He did okay. But at the same time, he was only 18 then or 19 then. And he was that was his first tournament and he did okay. Coming in now in this World Cup, I reckon he's going to start. And I hope he starts alongside Borna Sosa, who's been quite brilliant in the last in the past few seasons for Stuttgart as their chief creator from the flanks, just crossing it in. It's a shame that they don't have this Mandzukic getting on the crosses. It's a shame, I would say, because I love Mandzukic a bit. But they're going to be a team to watch for me, Croatia.
Okay, so that's this year's World Cup. Going back to the last World Cup, 2018, I think a bit of a surprise, Antonio, that he got this far. I mean, you mentioned the game against Argentina, but still.
No, I mean, sure, a bit of a surprise, after those two initial games at the group stage. I think they pretty much lay down their cards on the table saying, we are here, we want to do something big. We were talking about the talent that Croatia, or actually that part of Eastern Europe, has produced recently. As a humanities teacher, sometimes I share with my students, or we do projects on social movements, and we look at different types of society. Why do I say this? Is because I do really, really believe that countries, communities, societies that go through drama together, and the Croatians went through a big drama as they were. There is something that unites them, and they allow them. Not allow them, but they can be nasty, and we were talking about that, and they have that attitude on the field. Yes. So if you combine that, you want to be nasty, we can be the most nasty of all, but also you add the talent. Look, the teams with those two characteristics, they should always go farther, and I think Croatia is a good example. I'm very, very curious to see what's going to be the performance of, in the current World Cup that we are facing in a week time, of players that we know for sure is going to be the last World Cup. And Modric is one of them. Messi is another one. I know we will talk later on, but or in another show. But I'm just thinking about Modric in 2018, thinking, well, this could be maybe my last World Cup. Maybe I could extend it one more. COVID, a lot of things that might, made him think back then in that, I want to do well. And as a team, the Croatians are very united. And sometimes it's because, together they went through really, really tough moments that, built resilience. And it's a good team. And no doubt, you guys know that the amount of talent that they have pretty much in all the lines. So, surprise in Russia 2018? Yes, but a question mark. I think once after that performance versus Argentina, they were very solid.
But just to add on to the point on determination on Croatia. So they, like just to prove a point there, so they've gone through two penalty shootouts, just extra times in the round of 16, quarterfinals, another extra times, semifinals, another extra times, and they won it all. And it just goes to show that they stick together. They've gone through rough moments together. That determination just goes full out. You can see them sprinting. I remember Mandzukic just sprinting in the 120th minute, just hurrying defenders along. And that just goes to show it. The determination of these Croatians, they know what it takes to get dirty and get work done.
I'm not I'm not here to make any free advertisement of Netflix, but there is a very good documentary called Leaders about six captains of football teams.
Yeah.
The show is called Leaders again, and they
Captains.
And one of them is about Luka Modric, and the first 15 minutes are breathtaking. You will find out why Luka Modric is the player he is right now. Like, this guy didn't go to school because parents didn't have money, and the guy spent all his primary years in the woods with his grandfather.
Right.
So, you know, determination, nastiness, competitiveness, they are this, they have this fire, you know. Anyway.
Yeah, all right. So there are other players I want to mention, of course, Ivan Perisic had a good tournament.
Perisic, yes.
Ante Rebic. Mario Mandzukic, yeah, you mentioned him, but I don't know. I kind of felt that if this Croatia had a double sucker, maybe. Yeah, I think they might have won the World Cup. Also, maybe better centre backs. Better centre back. They are
not good. Vida, man. Vida is not bad.
Vida was brilliant in the last tournament. Yeah. To be honest.
But Lovren, I think he came out and said that, you know, he's the best defender in the world for the final. That's it. That's the end of the final.
You know what Vida means in Spanish?
Vida means life.
You guys know what Vida is life. You're right.
Yeah. Right. We've been friends long enough, Antonio.
Yeah, I know. I know. Don't mention the years.
Okay. And now the champions, France. Okay. My opinion, I didn't really felt that in this World Cup, there was a team like, there was like an outstanding team. Like you would say Spain in 2010. I was this team by far the best team. So deserve to win the World Cup. Or maybe even Brazil in 2002, that kind of team, you know, like fantastic. This one I felt was pretty even. You could, you know, if England had won it or Belgium had won it, you would say, you know, not bad, good team. So the same thing for France. I didn't really feel like, you know, France is this fantastic team. Not like, I wouldn't say the 98 team, but not like when they won Euro 2000 and that team was really good. But that's my personal opinion on France as world champions. But yeah, I mean, you guys, Chunang, France in 2018. Let's keep it to 2018, bro.
Yeah, sorry.
Tell me about it.
For me, France in 2018 were the best team, deserved game. They created a lot of chances. And I think one X factor that they had was this Kylian Mbappe guy. And Antoine Griezmann. These two just ripped defenses apart. I think both of them got four goals each, and it just goes to show their attacking potential, right? But Olivier Giroud in that tournament as well, he was the link between Griezmann and Mbappe, who just kept pressuring defenders, just supplying balls to them, and just really just...
He didn't score a goal, right, in this tournament?
He did not score a goal. But it's his selfless work outside of goal scoring that just made Mbappe the player that he is. And Griezmann, the performance that he did was mainly due to the selfless act from Olivier Giroud. But even defensively, we had, like, France had Raphael Varane, they had Samuel Umtiti, Benjamin Pavard was on the verge of a move to Bayern Munich as well.
Yeah.
That was a Hernandez. Solid team. Lucas Hernandez, yes. Again, another Bayern Munich player, right? Yeah. Presnel Kimpembe, I don't think he played, but he's another solid backup at that time. Now he's a
Hugo Lloris as well.
Hugo Lloris had a strange tournament. He actually let in a very strange goal, you know, tried to cut the player and stuff like that.
I think he gave away a silly error in the final.
Perisic, yeah.
Hugo Lloris, he can be dependable. But at the same time, Hugo Lloris, the defense, it speaks for itself. And that midfield, Pogba, Kante, that was the best midfield duo you can ever hope in an international tournament, in my opinion. What do you think, guys?
I was gonna say that. Player by player, there I think nobody will argue the fact that they were the best without considering that they won at the end. But if I ask you, pick a team in the 2018 World Cup where you will take one player per line, most probably all of us will pick France, right? And we can put aside Lloris, sure, but definitely you will bring one defender, one midfield, and definitely one, if not two, of the strikers. And it's very difficult. I want to highlight this because it's very difficult to go into a tournament as favorites, like France went, and deliver and bring the tournament back. So I think that is, you know, credit to the team. My only challenge with France is the manager. And I think they would be, or they could be, way better. Like, they could show way more superiority if they with a different manager. And I don't have anything against him, but I think yes, and I think he spent too much time in Italy. Apologize for those who love Italian football in the 90s, but maybe a manager with a slightly more forward mentality, I think France will be pretty much unbeatable, because player by player, you know, pick up. I did a Google search right now. I could tell you 10 players of that squad in 2018 that I won for my team without a doubt. Like, I will pick them right away. So yeah, that's it. So my challenge is not the players, is on the bench.
Okay.
Very valid point. Sorry, just want to say a very valid point from Antonio, is the coach. But like you said, Russ, I find you, when you said it's not the strongest squad you have seen for the French team, a bit puzzling, because you look at the names, you know, minus.
No, I'm talking about performance, not about the squad. When I watched them play, I think it's got to do with what Antonio is saying, because I felt like they were playing with their handbrakes on. So not like, you know, wow, you know, like they come at you and they completely bamboozle you and all that. Right? Really,
I mean,
strong
they did.
Team.
I mean, if you look at it, there were a couple of moments of brilliance from like Mbappe and stuff like that. When
I think their best performance was in the final.
100%. And also against Argentina, I feel their best performance. Also, the player of the tournament for me, N'Golo Kanté, that guy was having, like, I think he just won the Champions League the season before, or something like that. Or he won a major, or he won the EPL or something. And he came into the tournament high in confidence, make the whole French midfield look incredible. But he was the one mopping up. So I think the French team deservedly, I think, went all the way and lifted the cup.
I would like to add, to add one more point. But for tournaments, right, for tournament football, I just think it's better to be conservative, because tournament football, all you need is just one goal. You don't have to score five. All you need is just be conservative, hit them on the counter, which is what France did against Argentina, to be honest, and just win the game. So tournament football is a bit different in the sense that you can be passive and still win big. And that's ultimately a lot of the game plans of this tournament.
Managers.
International managers, yes. And it's also how these international managers, we have to say that you know, they are not given the time needed for them to coach the players. So in a lot of instances, it's a lot about letting the individuals perform. Mm-hmm. Be compact, be solid, but when the right moment comes, let the individual brilliance shine. So I think that's what exactly happened in that 2018 World Cup.
When it mattered the most, I think the players
stepped
up.
Okay. I just want to speak about something that is one team I felt that was really poor and shouldn't have even been in this World Cup would have been Argentina. Because I thought, if not for Messi, I don't think they would have been in this World Cup. They would have joined us sitting at home watching TV. And also, Kel, this is the first World Cup and my team is not in the World Cup. Yeah,
I didn't want to mention the whole podcast. I didn't want to mention it first. Once. Yes, I knew it. I was going to do it earlier part of the show, but I just thought, hey, you know what?
We have been very respectful.
Yes, yes. That's right, Antonio.
Yeah, so...
But what a story, right? Like, yeah. I mean, I know we are not here to talk about Italy, but what a story that they don't... I mean, they become European champions, but they don't qualify for the World Cup.
Again, yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So... Yeah, I'm gonna go back if you allow me very, very quickly to your thoughts on Argentina. And I would say that yes, you're right, they should not have been. If it was not for Messi, they should not deserve to be in the World Cup. But the problem is that where does Messi play? Right? He's Argentinian. If he was Poland, maybe Poland will make the semifinals. If he was right. Every time I think about that, there was an option 20 years ago that he could have been Spanish. I go like, who did not make that decision to make the little dude Spaniard, right? Maybe, maybe we will have a couple of stars in our chest rather than just one.
Yeah. So that was that out of the way. So now before we end the show, I just want to ask each and every one of you, all the World Cups you've watched, rank them from number one to whichever number you watched.
I got a higher chance because I'm the older by
a while. Yeah. You got more followed by me.
Can we do like top five or something?
No, you guys go first.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't do top five.
Chunhan's probably the youngest guest we ever had on our show.
Yeah.
How old are you, Chunhan?
I'm 21.
I think you would be the youngest guest we had on Back Pass with Russ. So it's even younger than our resident young man.
Don't embarrass me here now.
Okay, I'll go first.
You for could me, be one, my son, Chung Chang.
Serious? Do you have a son, actually? I know this
segment. Which one?
Do you have a son, Antonio?
Yeah. I have four, and one is 16.
I see.
I'm very old, but I don't look like. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, Russ, for me, number one would be 1994. So I'm going to go 1994, 1998, 2006, 2002, 2018, 2010, and then 2014. That's the last one for me. So this are my favorite. From the favorite is 94. Least favorite is 2014.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go next. A quick one. Best World Cup was my first ever World Cup, which is 2002. I thought that was, Brazil, stole the tournament. 2010, 2006, and then my least favorite is 2018.
Okay.
I'm sorry, guys. It's all a two in front. Chunhuang, best of luck to you, man.
Oh, my God. I mean, for me, I don't even qualify for this question, man. I've only ever really properly watched 2018 World Cup, and I casually watched 2010 World Cup. But for me, it has
2018 then.
World Cup for me, man. By the process of default,
Okay. Okay, now the
Antonio, come on, give it to us.
The creme de la creme.
Thank you for having me in the show. Bye. Thank you very much. No, of course, I'm gonna try to complement or to add on, everything that you guys say. But I will try also to give you a couple of recommendations. I'm old, and my first memory of a World Cup, I mean, I'm not that old. I will be 50 next year in May. But anyway, my first memory of a World Cup was the World Cup in my country in 1982, where Spain did terrible, but Italy did fantastic, and they won the World Cup. Yes, Russ, at least that's one of the stars that you have here. And nicely, very nicely. Actually, Kel and I, we talked up before the show, and we say, let me mention Italy at the end, right?
Perfect. Good timing, Antonio.
I know. Jokes aside, guys, there is in YouTube, and if I can remember, I will send it to you. There is a game in that World Cup, which is the Italy-Brazil in the stadium of Real Club Deportivo Español, which is the team I support in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. That is a fantastic, fantastic game to watch. Italy-Brazil. I can't remember if it was the quarterfinals or the... I can't remember which
stage. I think back then was like you had the first group stage, then you had the second group stage. So the, in that group,
okay.
Italy-Brazil, Argentina.
Unfortunately, I don't remember. But that is a game that everybody who loves football should watch. And I'm talking about 1982, right? Chunghan, yes, long time ago. And my second greatest memory, and to me, because I don't count 2010, I don't count it because it's my country winning the World Cup, suffering from game number one, but then, of course, best World Cup ever. So I'm going to put 2010 on the side. The World Cup that I do have amazing memories because it's the only time that I've seen one player bringing the trophy home is 1986. The display, the powerful, the leadership that Diego Maradona put together is brutal. And I'm talking about Diego Maradona as a footballer, which, to be honest, is the best magician I've seen on a football pitch. So I'll go, you know, 82, 86. I have good memories of 1990. I do remember Argentina, of course, in that penalty shootout versus Italy, which was fantastic. And then not a lot of great memories, to be honest. 94, the reason why I remember well the 94 is because...
Baggio Luis
Enrique.
Is the Luis Enrique elbow from Tassotti. That is the first time that I thought Spain could do something great. And to the point that I remember printing out from a magazine, the starting 11, I frame it, I took it to a shop, I frame it and I put it in the wall because I was convinced that we were going to be world champions. And then, of course, we start losing versus Nigeria, which nobody understood who was Nigeria with Zubizarreta doing, terrible game. Anyway, 1984.
But Nigeria were Olympic gold medalists at that time.
That is true. But I do have good memories of that because I studied in the US in the early 90s and people were getting ready and football, soccer there was starting to be famous. So 94, 98.
What a goal, right? To end Spain's journey.
Yeah, correct. And then, not a lot of memories of the 2000s, to be honest. 22 and 2006. And then, of course, 2010, as I say, with, I would say, not only that, but for us as a Spaniard, and especially me being in this part of the world, to be able to witness firsthand, as Russ mentioned at the beginning, the 2008, 2010, and 2012 as two times European champions and the world champions. It is the time that I was in those big channels and broadcasters, and it was a fantastic experience to watch it firsthand and to go to TV saying I'm a world champion and I am European champion.
Yeah.
Then, of course, Brazil is a disaster for Spain, as I mentioned, and Russia is another disaster. Big question mark for what's gonna be the performance of Spain in Qatar. The big star of our team in this World Cup is none of the players is in the bench. It's Luis Enrique.
The star.
That's the biggest star of Spain. Period.
Mm. All right, guys. So, thanks a lot for sharing. You know, a lot of valuable information, right, Kel? Chunghan, especially wonderful stats.
Welcome.
Previews.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, welcome on the show. Thanks a lot for all that sharing. Antonio, as usual, you know, lots to share, lots of experience as well. I remember a lot of those because I watched those old films of the old World Cup. So I remember all the 82, 86, and all. I know how those World Cups would pan out. Interesting World Cups.
Very.
Kel, it's been a journey. I started it alone in 1990 from the 1990 World Cup.
You didn't include me from 1990.
Yeah, because obviously you weren't even born. So I had to do it alone. And then I brought you in from 2002 onwards. So yeah, you know, we reached the end of our World Cup countdown show. This will be released on the day of the first game of 2022 World Cup, Qatar against Ecuador. So enjoy this World Cup. We will be back with some World Cup shows at the end of every round. So yeah, look out for those episodes. It's me, Ras, now signing out. Ciao. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Welcome. One team, one you, lights high, thousand roadblocks, one shot, one truth, no fears, one flag, oh yeah, we've been waiting for this, oh yeah, we all out.